It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Vaccines. One shudders to think where we would be without them. Over the decades, vaccines have saved countless lives. Nobody knows this better than my first guest, Dr. Paul Offit, considered by many to be one of the heroes and leaders of the public discussion of how vaccines save lives. Dr. Offit is this year's recipient of the Porter Prize, awarded in recognition of an individual's exceptional performance in health promotion and disease prevention by the University of Pittsburgh Graduate School of Public Health. The presentation is tomorrow at 1 p.m. at the University Club on the Pitt campus. More about that later. Dr. Offit serves as the director of the Vaccine Education Center at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, as well as the Maurice R. Hillman Professor of Vaccinology and Professor of Pediatrics at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. He joins me now in studio. Dr. Paul Offit, congratulations and welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you, Paul.
You can join the conversation by calling 246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. Again, the number 412-246-2002. Dr. Offit, you are the author of several books, including Deadly Choices, How the Anti-Vaccine Movement Threatens Us All. Why do you think we are seeing a movement like this?
I think people aren't scared of the disease. In many ways, it's not surprising. We ask parents in this country to give vaccines to prevent 14 different diseases. In the first few years of life, that can mean as many as 26 inoculations. It can mean as many as 5 shots at one time to prevent diseases most people don't see using biological fluids most people don't understand. I think in many ways, it's more of an anti-vaccine sentiment. I think people just are compelled by fear more than reason, and they don't fear the disease.
How big of a threat is this?
Well, it's a threat. I mean, you now have enough sort of erosion, if you will, in herd immunity that you're starting to see some of these diseases come back. We eliminated measles from this country by the year 2000, but we had a big outbreak last year that started in Southern California, spread to 25 states.
Disneyland, right?
That's right. Started in Disneyland. Exactly right.
And so there are others who believe a widely discredited study that says vaccines can cause autism spectrum disorder. Where does this come from?
Well, it came from the mind of a gastroenterologist in England in the late 1990s who believed that the combination of measles, mumps, rubella, or MMR vaccine caused autism. You could argue that in the best of the worlds, what he did was he raised the hypothesis, but it was a testable hypothesis. There are now at least 15 studies that have looked at that question and answered it clearly. MMR doesn't cause autism, yet this particular researcher persists.
And, of course, there is this controversy has been in the news. There is a documentary, and I'm making quotes with my fingers, called Vaxxed, From Cover-Up to Catastrophe, which is an anti-vaccine-positioned documentary, which Robert De Niro famously had originally allowed into the Tribeca Film Festival and then, after a public outcry, decided against it. How much of that is fueling this idea that, you know, vaccines are bad?
Yeah, I think that notion, frankly, the notion that was raised that the MMR vaccine caused autism, which is at the heart of this particular documentary, I think people don't see that as a issue anymore. And certainly this particular researcher, Andrew Wakefield, has been marginalized and arguably vilified, I think, for continuing to sort of put that notion forward. I think it's more of a sentiment. I think people just aren't scared of the disease, and so they figure they can get away with not vaccinating, which is true to a point, but we've reached that point now, and you get enough people who haven't vaccinated that you're starting to see outbreaks. And when you see outbreaks, it's exactly what you'd expect to see, which is to say the most contagious diseases come back first. Measles, mumps, whooping cough, that's exactly what we're seeing.
And how much of a danger is it when, and we'll get into some of this philosophical and religious exemptions and also Pennsylvania's 8-month grace period that currently exists for school children, which some would like to see, the Department of Health would like to see reduced to just 5 days. But how dangerous is it if I am a family that is very proactive about making sure that my child has all the vaccinations that are necessary when they enter school, and there happen to be, say, 3 or 4 kids who are not vaccinated? How much of a threat is that to the health of my own child?
It's a threat. First of all, you'd like to think that vaccines are 100% effective. They're not. I mean, the measles vaccine, which is an excellent vaccine, is about 95% effective.
Do people assume that they are I'm safe. I've got the vaccine. I'm good to go.
That's exactly right. But for measles, you know, where it's 95% effective, that means that 5 of every 100 people who've gotten the vaccine will not be protected. And certainly if you're around enough people who aren't vaccinated, there's a chance that they could contract and then the disease and then spread it to you.
Where do you stand on the topic of vaccines? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. That's 412-246-2002. Are you someone who is proactive in terms of making sure that your child is vaccinated? Or are you a person who has an exemption or who has exercised an exemption from having your child vaccinated? 412-246-2002. We'd like to hear the whys coming from both positions. You can also reach us via email at esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh. As a man of science, Dr. Offit, a tireless researcher, the co-inventor of the rotavirus vaccine, how frustrating is it for you to be confronted with people who might Google a few things and then decide that they know more than you do?
Well, I think it's not surprising. You know, my parents were children of the 20s and 30s. They saw diphtheria as a common killer of teenagers. They saw polio, you know, ravaging the young and causing many cases, thousands of cases of paralysis. I was a child of the 50s and 60s. I had measles. I had mumps. I had German measles. I had chickenpox. So I had all these diseases. So I know how important it is to vaccinate. But my children, who are 23 and 21, not only don't see these diseases today, they didn't grow up with these diseases. For them, it's a matter of faith. And so I think we need to step back and re-explain ourselves, re-explain why it's important to get vaccines. So it's a little frustrating, but I think it's certainly understandable.
And what do you say to people to convince them that their fears are not founded in any kind of fact or science?
Well, first of all, you have to find out what specifically their concerns are. So, for example, if they fear that vaccines cause autism, you can show them now the many, many studies that show that that don't, and how it is one does that study and how it is that you come to get those answers. But I think you have to be able to talk about science in a compassionate and passionate way, and at some level frame it with emotion. I mean, it's very hard to defeat emotion with statistics, so I think you have to be emotional on your side to make sure that it's clear that a choice not to get a vaccine is not a risk-free choice. It's a choice to take a different and more serious risk, and this is what that more serious risk can look like. There's not a year that goes by at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia where we don't see a child admitted who dies from a vaccine-preventable disease. And invariably, it's because the child's parents had chosen not to vaccinate them, had put them in harm's way, whether it's from influenza, less commonly from pneumococcus or pertussis. We see that every year, and it breaks your heart.
I was going to ask you to give me an emotional example, but I think you just did. So that's the type of thing that you'll confront a skeptic with?
Yeah, I'll give you another example. We saw a child in our hospital who was seen as an outpatient little boy at 2, 4, and 6 months of age. The parents had recently converted to Muslim and decided that meant they shouldn't vaccinate their child, although there's nothing in the Muslim religion that says don't vaccinate it. At 11 months of age, that child got pneumococcal meningitis with a type of pneumococcus that was contained in the vaccine that he would have gotten. He then had a severe case of meningitis. He had a herniation event, which meant that his brain pressed down on his brain stem, causing him to stop breathing. Now, we saved his life, but he will never see or walk or speak or hear again. This is someone who could have lived 70 or 80 years without any problem. He could have had a long-lived, fruitful, happy life. He probably will only live a few more years. And it's because of a decision his parents made.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is Dr. Paul Offit. He's recipient of this year's Porter Prize for Exceptional Performance in Health Promotion and Disease Prevention by the University of Pittsburgh Graduate School of Public Health. Pennsylvania's record when it comes to vaccines is not the best. As recently as the 2013-2014 school year, Pennsylvania had one of the worst vaccination rates in the country for measles, mumps, and rubella. This according to the Centers for Disease Control. Why are so many children in this state not up to date on their vaccines at the start of school?
Because you can exempt yourself from vaccines for two reasons in the state of Pennsylvania. One, for religious reasons, or two, for so-called philosophical or personal belief reasons. We have both of those exemptions. And so, therefore, in our state, or commonwealth to be more accurate, you're allowed to expose your child to harm and expose those to whom they're going to be come in contact with at harm. I don't think it should be your right to allow your child to catch and transmit a potentially fatal infection. But such is the way it exists in this country.
Pennsylvania is one of 20 states that currently allows philosophical exemptions from vaccines. By allowing this, does it plant the seed of doubt in people's minds? How much does this reinforce? If somebody has any doubts at all about vaccines and the state says, well, yeah, if you're afraid or you have a religious exemption or a philosophical basis for wanting to be exempted, it's fine. Does that reinforce the thinking that people have that, it's okay, I'll just skip it?
Very much so. I think if you're saying that one can have, for example, a personal belief exemption, that sort of implies that this is a belief system, that vaccines are at some level of belief system, that you need to believe in them. But they're not a belief system. They're an evidence-based system, and they stand on a mountain of evidence any more than gravity, say, is a belief system. Revolution is a belief system. Those aren't belief systems either. Those are evidence-based systems. But I think you're exactly right. It's a good point.
And State Department of Health data analyzed by our content partner, Public Source, at the start of this school year shows that in the past 8 years, measles vaccination rates for kindergartners in most Pennsylvania counties never reached a key threshold, the point at which disease is unlikely to spread. So you talked about how this anti-vaccine paranoia has caused a recurrence of diseases that we thought we had eliminated through vaccines. So what is the danger that we could possibly be seeing in Pennsylvania because, based on this data and because of the low vaccination rates?
I think we actually experienced that in 1991 in Philadelphia, when we had over a several-month period in one city, in just one season, we had 1,400 cases of measles and 9 deaths. And that centered on two fundamentalist churches that didn't believe in vaccination and so didn't vaccinate their children. So they served as the epicenter for an outbreak that spread from both started in those church communities and then spread outward. I mean, it was like an Armageddon of measles. And it was hopefully it's a lesson we don't have to continue to learn.
Our guest is Dr. Paul Offit. He is recipient of this year's Porter Prize for Exceptional Performance in Health Promotion and Disease Prevention by the University of Pittsburgh Graduate School of Public Health. We'd like to get some opinions shared as part of this conversation. 412-246-2002 is the number to call to take part in the conversation. 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH@WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. Again, the number 412-246-2002. I think a lot of people probably don't understand how it is that vaccines work. And essentially, you're taking a piece of the thing that you are trying to protect people from and injecting that into them, which I guess for many people can be just a scary concept in itself.
Yeah, what you do basically is you weaken the virus or bacteria to the extent that it cannot cause disease, but it still induces an immunity that would be the consequence of natural infection. So you get to have the immunity from natural infection without having to pay the price of natural infection. That's what vaccines do. It's the best of both worlds.
How many people are not aware of the basic concept? How many times do you feel that or do you end up having to explain that to people?
Often. I think people see, interestingly, vaccination as an unnatural act. They want to sort of just let, nature have its way. Vaccines are made from all the products of nature. You just basically take those parts of the virus or bacteria that induces a protective immune response, but separate that from the part that causes disease. That's the way every vaccine is made.
Do you ever say to people, if you think that this is a natural, if this is part of nature, let's look at the plague. Would you like to have, would you prefer not to have an antidote for that?
Yeah, I think Mother Nature must have a really good public relations person, because Mother Nature can kill you and did. There's a great New Yorker cartoon where it has two cavemen sitting around a campfire, and one of them says to the other, "I don't get it. All our air is clean, all our water is pure, all our animals are free range, and nobody lives past 30. We've been fighting against Mother Nature with things like vaccines and antibiotics and sanitation programs for centuries, and for that reason, we live longer than we ever used to.
Pennsylvania currently has an 8-month grace period at the start of the school year for children. Some are trying to see that shortened dramatically to as few as 5 days. I want to ask you about that, but I also want to get to, while we have the time, Megan in Moon Township, who has a question. Megan, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. You're on with Dr. Paul Offit.
Yes, hi. I have a question about we constantly hear medical professionals explaining that there is not a link now between autism and vaccinations. And obviously we have the evidence to demonstrate that. Has there been any effort in the medical community to kind of change the dialogue about understanding autism better? Because it almost seems like parents are more willing to put their children at risk of death and, you know, hearing some of these awful conditions they go through before passing away. It's almost as if parents who are weighing this decision without evidence look at autism as a fate worse than death. And I kind of wanted to understand if there's effort, you know, to kind of change that dialogue about it.
Yeah, so that's a great question, Megan. Thank you. I think what you see is there actually is a lot of money devoted to trying to understand the cause or causes of autism. And there's actually a lot of very good data out there on the fact that it's a genetic disorder. It's unfortunately not a single gene like sickle cell disease or cystic fibrosis, which is a single gene disorder. It's a multiple gene disorder. And now they know sort of what proteins those genes are making and when those proteins are expressed when the baby is still in the womb. And so that information is all out there, but it's not that sexy. I mean, it's much sexier to say the vaccines did it or this pesticide did it. I mean, because that's something people can get their arms around. It's I think you have much less sense of control when you hear that it's a genetic disorder. And that frankly, if you're autistic when you're five, that means that you frankly were autistic when you were two and you were autistic when you were born. And I think it's hard for people to be able to grasp that because it means you give up some level of controlling the outcome.
Megan, thank you for that call. And I want to get back to the question I had earlier about Pennsylvania currently having an 8-month grace period at the start of the school year for children to get all of their required vaccines. Should it be shortened as the State Department of Health is proposing, dramatically reducing that to a 5-day grace period?
Yes, I think that would certainly help because, you know, the more people that are unimmunized, the more likely you are to have the spread of these diseases, which is what's happened. So we need to protect children in this state, and that's at least one way to do it.
And I'm curious about, as you set out in your medical career to help children, how did you end up getting involved in this particular area?
I was a resident at Children's Hospital in Pittsburgh, and I remember when I was a second-year resident, there was a child who came in from sort of the Appalachian region, western here in this area, and she was a great mother. She was a sort of salt-of-the-earth kind of mother. Her child had fever and vomiting and diarrhea, and she had done what the doctor had told her to do, which is try and give frequent sips of water containing glucose and minerals, sugar and minerals. But her child became rapidly overwhelmed with dehydration, came into our hospital, and we tried to resuscitate the child by giving the child the fluids that she needed. But, you know, she was so dehydrated, you couldn't get an intravenous line into her arms or her legs. And so we called a surgeon down who tried to get one into her neck, and even she was too dehydrated for that. So we actually tried to infuse fluid into her bone marrow. I'd never seen that before. And then she died. And then comes the worst moment you can ever imagine as a resident, which is you have to then go out and tell the mother that her otherwise healthy 9-month-old little girl had died. And she died of a disease called rotavirus, and that always stuck with me. And when I went to Children's Hospital in Philadelphia, I became part of a team at Children's Hospital that ultimately developed what became the rotavirus vaccine. And that image was always in my mind. That image from what happened to me in Pittsburgh was always in my mind.
Let's go to Jesse in Slippery Rock with a question. Hi, Jesse. Welcome. You're on with Dr. Paul Offit.
Good morning. Hey, I just had a question. I'm a former school teacher. I'm retired now, but I'm curious if all the kids in the class are immunized against, say, measles, and one child is not, how does that expose the children who are already immunized against the measles? If they're immunized, I think that would protect them from the only person who would be at risk would be the unimmunized people. Am I incorrect in that thought?
That would be correct if vaccines were 100% effective, but they're not. They're you know, in the case of measles vaccine, it's about 95% effective. In the case of influenza vaccine, that vaccine is about 60% effective. So, you know, there's sort of different levels of effectiveness. You're not 100% protected if you're not vaccinated. And certainly, if there's only one child in a school setting that's unvaccinated, that's not too bad. But remember that classroom also spends time with other children as well. So what we're seeing in this country now is there has been an erosion of what one would call herd immunity or community immunity. So you're starting to see outbreaks of diseases like measles. And you're starting to see, because measles vaccine isn't 100% effective, some of the people who get measles have gotten the measles vaccine.
Jesse, thank you for that phone call. And unfortunately, we've come to time for this segment. My guest has been Dr. Paul Offit, recipient of this year's Porter Prize for Exceptional Performance in Health Promotion and Disease Prevention by the University of Pittsburgh Graduate School of Public Health. His presentation tomorrow is called Unvaccinated: The Strange History of Vaccine Exemptions. It will take place tomorrow at 1 p.m. at the University Club on the Pitt campus, featuring a question and answer session, which I have the honor of hosting. And the event open to the public, and you'll be able to ask your questions as well. Dr. Paul Offit, exciting to meet you. Thank you so much for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up a little later in the show, why has so much taxpayer money been wasted in Afghanistan? I'll interview John Sopko, whose job is to watch over U.S. government spending in Afghanistan. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.